Welcome to the PapaCast on the Gridiron. Now here's your host, Bob Papa.
Another edition of the PapaCast. So glad you could join us as we're talking some NFL and some golf. And who better to talk about both of those subjects than our guest today, Sterling Sharpe, 5-time Pro Bowler, 3-time first-team All-Pro with the Green Bay Packers, who takes a couple minutes to join us here on the PapaCast. Sterling, how are you?
Bob, I'm great, man. I'm glad you could have me on.
Yeah, it's good to have you on the PapaCast, and I'm all fired up because next week in Orlando, it's the Diamond Resorts Invitational, which is a celebrity golf event, which will be on Golf Channel Thursday, Friday, and Saturday from 2:30 to 4:30 on each of the days. And we've got great former athletes and celebrities all participating, and Sterling is in the field. And I got to get a little test right now of how your game is.
My game's not bad, Bob. You know, the weather here in South Carolina has been, you know, pretty cold and rainy for a long time. So hopefully, I was out in Vegas over the New Year's and got a chance to work on it out there. So I think it's in good shape. I feel good about, you know, going down to Orlando and putting my Nike clubs to work, but we'll see when we get there.
Sterling, you know, obviously you're a great athlete in one sport, and now you're competing, you're on television, and you play out in Lake Tahoe every year, and you're part of that mix, and, you know, your name appears on the first page of the leaderboard, but can you take us inside the ropes of what it's like when you're trying to perform at a high level at a sport that is not your given sport, so to speak?
It's easier because it's, you know, it's fun. You get a chance to be around guys you would not normally be around, so that's the fun part. It's also harder because at that given moment, you know, on third and 12, and, you know, you get, as a receiver, you get a play call. You get an opportunity to make that play in the motion of the game, knowing people are going to move, and I've been setting this guy up for this route all day. In golf, you got to hit that shot at that time. And, you know, for a lot of us, that's very difficult to do because there's so many shots to choose from. That shot, you know that you have to hit, whether it's a high draw, high fade, low cut, whatever it is. We can all hit it because we all have a golf company supporting us that are giving us great equipment. We've all put in the work practice-wise, Bob. But the thing is we are not conditioned to hit that shot at that time like guys who do it, you know, the Jordan Spieths or the Jason Days or Ricky Fowlers of the world. So that it's also harder. So it's a combination of both, but it's a lot of fun to be in that arena because no longer do I say to myself, how does Dustin Johnson 3-putt from 12 feet in the U.S. Open to get in the playoff? Because I understand how he does. Or, you know, how in the world does a guy hit the ball in the water on the 17th green at Sawgrass? I understand it now because, you know, having been in that arena. So it's a lot of fun, comparable to football, but it's also harder.
You know, the other thing that I find interesting is, look, it's a big field. It's a field of 84. There's a big field in Tahoe. And there's some guys that are in the field strictly for entertainment purposes. Obviously, you know, Kevin Nealon, Charles Barkley, that ilk. And then Larry the Cable Guy, who's going to be in Orlando. And then there's guys that have good games, but games that aren't going to win. You have the game that can win. Does that change sort of the dynamic of the fun of the week?
No, not at all, because the thing is you want to put yourself in a position to give myself a chance to win, whether it's the first day, second day, and or third day. Give myself a chance to win. And most of the guys, as you mentioned in Tahoe, most of the guys know there's going to be 12 guys that are going to be in the top 12, and you can mix up maybe the top 1, 2, 3, 4 will probably not change very much. The rest of those guys, the other 6 or 7 of us, are going to change. We'll be anywhere from 7th to 12th. But it's all who gets hot that week. It's the guys who can put it together at that time. And I'm not saying that in the sense of like a PGA Tour guy where Jordan Spieth gets it going and he can go low and win the Masters and the U.S. Open. I'm saying Rick Roden is always going to be there because he has been there the most. Billy Joe Tolliver is going to be there because he's been there a lot. You know, those guys are going to be there. The last few years in Lake Tahoe, for instance, and you've seen it as well. You know, we had last year Josh Scobie is right there to win the trophy, played great golf, shot 66, 67 one day. I mean, doesn't get it done. Steph Curry's right there the year before to get it done. Doesn't, you know, so because they haven't been there enough. And, you know, we know who we are. We have a chance to win, but realistically, you know, if we finish anywhere from 5 to 10, we're going to be pretty happy.
Talking with Sterling Sharp here on the PapaCast. One other area I'd like to talk to you about a little bit is the 15 finalists for the Pro Football Hall of Fame announced, and obviously Brett Favre in that final 15. Tell me about that first encounter with Brett Favre, and then you guys, you know, put up some tremendous numbers before, you know, your career got cut short. But take me back to sort of day one with Favre.
Well, the thing is I know as a player didn't have any expectation because we didn't know who Brett Favre was. You know, hey, we're giving up a first-round draft pick for this guy coming in from Atlanta. Okay, he's got to be pretty good. And then Don Majkowski, for whatever reason, is our starter at the beginning of the season. I had played with Don for 4 years, and he hadn't played a full season but maybe once. And so, you know, there was that possibility that he was going to get nicked, and all of a sudden we got this Brett Favre guy that's going to be our backup. Well, what's interesting is when he came in the game, Bob, it was kind of funny. He was looking over at the sideline at the signal, and he was like, what in the world is Ty doing? I can't make out what he's doing. And I was like, that's good, because Ty is not the hot guy. It's Mark Brunell. So I actually called plays early on in that game because he didn't have the signals down. But the one thing he could do was he could play. He had a feel. And when I say play and had a feel, I'm not talking about, okay, you can coach a guy to do this. I'm talking about he got out of bed with the ability to come in and make plays. And that's what he did. Brought us back against the Cincinnati Bengals. We win that game. We started on our 8-yard line, and I think in 3 plays we scored, which is really crazy for a guy who hadn't been in that position. Another thing that brings to mind is the game, the speed of the game, the timing of the game, whatever game it was never too big for him or never too important for him. And, you know, I know, you know, winning a playoff game in Detroit, I mean, his cadence didn't change. His voice inflection didn't change. His demeanor didn't change. He was always aware of his surroundings, whether it was people in the stands or, but it was never too big for him or never made you nervous because he was never, ever nervous. And he was fun to play with because he played as hard as he could. And when the game was over, win, lose, or draw, you know what? It was on to the next week. And that's something you don't find a lot of, or you can't build a lot of, or the NFL doesn't have a lot of. But what he was able to do, and I'm not talking about the longevity and the streak and how many consecutive games he started and played and all that, just the times that he was in the huddle, it was just like, almost like practice. You know, you never really felt like, oh, this is a big game. We go into Dallas where, you know, we knew we had to play our best. We hang 28 points on them, and they beat us with backup quarterback and Jason Garrett. Brett played great, you know, but the game never got too big for him, and it was a lot of fun being around him in those early years because I like to tell people, not taking any credit for anything in his career, but I raised him, and I got a chance to watch him grow up, and that was a lot of fun.
You know, your brother, Shannon's in the Hall of Fame, and I'll never forget that day before the Super Bowl in Tampa and, you know, anxiously awaiting, you know, sort of the verdict as the writers are voting. And unfortunately, he did not get in, even though, you know, we all felt he should have gotten in that first go-around. I mean, is there any way, shape, form, possibly, that Brett Favre would not get in his first pass?
Wow, that is a good, tough question. I would say no, based on all the things he has done. I would say no, unless the Hall want to just be funny and, you know, make him wait another year, just like he did at retirement, making people wait those 3, 4, 5 years that he kept saying he was done and kept coming back. But I don't think so, Bob. I think he is definitely a first ballot Hall of Famer because when he stopped playing, he had everything of significance. So I don't see any way that Brett Favre is not a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah, he is a jump-the-line guy if there ever was one. And obviously that announcement gets made before the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 50 in San Francisco. You got playoff games coming up this weekend, and I know you look at things with a very critical eye, and, you know, you're one of the guys that you and I have worked together. I know that you prepare very intensely, and you're on your P's and Q's with this stuff. So we could zip through these games a little bit here. I mean, this Kansas City story, And what Andy Reid has done is off the charts. When you lose your best offensive player, and that's Jamaal Charles, and you're sitting at 1-5, to kind of keep it together and give yourself a chance and win 10 in a row, they're going to Houston. Quarterback issues all year in Houston. That's no great surprise. Can Kansas City keep this thing going, in your opinion?
Absolutely. I mean, you look at what Kansas City has done, and you said Jamaal Charles, their best offensive player, but I think Alex Smith is one of the higher-paid players in the NFL at the quarterback position. They go out and get a guy that they know that can produce in Jeremy Maclin. They have a tight end that, you know, made enough plays that we all think he's one of the better tight ends in the league. I'm not even going to talk about their defense, because their defense has played kind of championship caliber football for the last few years. So they're a football team that they don't have any surprises. They don't have what the Houston Texans have in not knowing how their quarterback is going to perform, not knowing how their running game is not going to perform, not knowing how their passing game is going to perform. The Kansas City Chiefs all know that Alex Smith is not going to turn the football over. Jerry Maclin is, you can get him the football several different ways. All those receivers complement each other in the scheme of that offense very well. They, as Hank Stram would appreciate, they matriculate the football down the field. They're very efficient. And defensively, they can get after you with the best of any defense we have. So it's funny. You know, everybody wants to be better. And the Kansas City Chiefs are that team that are better because the sum of all their parts make their team.
In the night game, you got Pittsburgh going to Cincinnati. Now, we've talked, you know, about Marvin Lewis and how the Bengals are 0-4 in the postseason. Andy Dalton, who's not even going to play in the game. They haven't won a playoff game, you know, since the 80s. And then you got Pittsburgh, who kind of got lucky to get in, let's face it. I mean, the Jets going to Buffalo, you thought the Jets could win that game. Pittsburgh, after the debacle in Week 16, they find a way to get in. But D'Angelo Williams is banged up. And we saw last year when Le'Veon Bell wasn't available, despite the fact that they have probably the most explosive offense when you look at their receivers and what they bring to the table, when they didn't have that sort of balance, things got off the rails. Can Pittsburgh go into Cincinnati and win this week, in your opinion?
Absolutely. I mean, here's what we know, and you just mentioned it. The Pittsburgh Steelers have been in this situation before. And so going into this football game where they're going to see A.J. McCarron, I mean, if Pittsburgh gets out to a 14-3, 17-3 lead, and now the game is on the arm of A.J. McCarron, I think they feel pretty good about that. I think you, with the offense you just talked about, Pittsburgh being one of the most explosive, 130-some-odd catches by an outstanding receiver that they have in Antonio Brown, I think they take that on the road. I'm pretty sure it's going to be cold, going to be windy, but I think Ben and that offense, and I don't think they were lucky to get in. I think they did what they had to do. If the Jets win, they're in. They didn't win. Pittsburgh needed to win, and they won. And so I think that the Pittsburgh Steelers understand exactly what they're going through. And I think they have something to lose. And the pressure is on both teams because it's the playoffs, and it's an opportunity to get to Super Bowl 50. But when I look at the Cincinnati Bengals, and not having won a playoff game under your head coach, 0-6, I believe the number is, I think that they may be a little more tense, a little more tight, especially if things don't go their way early. And I know they're going to be challenged early. It's not going to go their way early. It never does when you're in that situation. But I go back to the regular season, and the Detroit Lions hadn't won in Lambeau Field in 20-some-odd years, and they found a way to do it. And I think this is a year of overcoming adversity, and I look for the Pittsburgh Steelers to overcome some adversity and find a way to win. Especially not only a playoff game, but against a rival that seems to play very well in Cincinnati and Pittsburgh.
I'm a big fan of Marvin Lewis, and I've gotten to know him. I feel bad for him that he doesn't have Dalton and he doesn't have, you know, his quarterback going into this game, because this is a good team. Some of these Cincinnati teams, like the one last year, I mean, they were completely banged up going into the postseason with, you know, the tight end was out, A.J. Green was out. But this is a good team this year. You know, Geno Atkins back healthy. They've got perfect. They got a good secondary.
Yeah.
It's kind of a shame, isn't it?
Well, I'm going to say that, you know what, the last 2 years he's had Andy Dalton, and you mentioned some of the problems they had last year. But you know what? Maybe this is the year where they can relax because they don't have Andy. And so they look at A.J. McCarron in a different, you know. They go, hey, A.J., just go out and let it work. Let it wing. Just wing it. Just let it go. you know, hey, everybody relax, you know what? And not using the moniker of no one believes in us but us. But you guess what? Hey, guys, nobody expects us to win. I mean, we're 0-6 in the playoffs. No one expects us to win this game. So let's do this. Let's just go out. Let's make it about another game and see what happens. And I think, you know, not having Andy Dalton may be a plus for that football team because they can't exhale, but maybe they can relax.
Sunday, Seattle goes to Minnesota to take on the Vikings. Now it's supposed to be the third or fourth coldest game that's ever been played in the postseason. They're expecting minus 15, you know, with the wind chill and everything else. Kickoff at 0 or -1, whatever. All I know is a couple weeks ago, Seattle went in there and they ran roughshod over Minnesota. Do you expect a repeat of that, or is there any chance that Seattle could have a level of complacency having just gone there and whipped them?
Well, you know, here's the thing. You're going to get Marshawn Lynch back in that lineup. Weather's supposed to be, like you say, nasty, cold. Do they lean too much on that? Are they able to throw the football? Because their passing game has been, Seattle's passing game has been outstanding the last few weeks. I look for it to be a good game because these two are the better teams in the NFC. Both of them deservedly made the playoffs. The Minnesota Vikings going into Lambeau Field, knocking off my Green Bay Packers to win a division. Monumental task. They were able to pull that off. So they're playing with a lot of confidence. I don't see a lot of runs. And I think the ball's going to be in the best player's hands. Adrian Peterson's going to have to do some things for Minnesota. And I definitely do believe Russell Wilson is going to have to throw the football for them to be successful. Both of these defenses, I mean, you go into Lambeau Field and do what you did to Aaron Rodgers. I mean, that's pretty impressive. So this defense of Minnesota is going to be playing with a lot of confidence, a lot of deserved credit. Hey, we deserve to be here. We're as good as this football team. Remember, this football team's coming to us. We're not going to them. And the fact that you've seen this movie one time before earlier in the year. So Minnesota definitely can win this football game. Would I give the edge to Seattle? I just don't think Russell Wilson and that passing game is going to fall off the train just because the temperature is going to get below zero.
Do we need to start looking at Russell Wilson differently? And I talked with Phil Simms of CBS about this. And, you know, Russell Wilson, playmaker, running around, extending plays, doing his Fran Tarkington. They use the running game in their defense. But if you look at the way he's had to play this year, especially in the second half of the season, I mean, he's passing the football as well as anybody in the NFL. Do people have to look at him differently now?
What's he doing differently than, say, Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay? What's he doing differently than, say, Tom Brady in New England? What's he doing differently than, say, when Peyton Manning had the Broncos undefeated? What's he doing differently than any of those guys? He is doing what he has to help his team win the game. Before, he didn't have to. I mean, although they threw the ball around pretty good against the Denver Broncos in that Super Bowl that they won, they didn't have to throw it 35 times a game because they were such a balanced football team, great defense, ran the football, great play-action pass game. I think you should look at Russell Wilson like we do Tom Brady. We should look at Russell Wilson like we do Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, some of the guys who throw it pretty good in our league, protect the football, help their team get victory. So I think we should, not just because he's running around, because I don't care who you are, and Steve Young proved this to me when the San Francisco 49ers won a Super Bowl against the San Diego Chargers. And Steve Young was one of the most mobile quarterbacks in the history of our league. He threw 6 touchdown passes in that game. I don't care how athletic you are. Cam Newton's finding that out in Carolina. Don't care how athletic you are. Don't care how dynamic you are outside the pocket. If you cannot throw the football to your guys in tight window and hit the open receiver, I don't care how dynamic you are with your leg, your football team is only going to have a certain measure of success. But because Russell Wilson can do it with his arm, yes, they have an excellent opportunity not only to go in and beat Minnesota, but to be in Super Bowl 50 as well, because the quarterback is playing as good as the other top quarterbacks, the Manning and the Tom Brady's, in these playoffs. So absolutely, we have to look at Russell Wilson that, just like we say Tom Terrific, and I say this all the time, Tom Brady has done more with less than any quarterback in the history of our league. So I'm not going to put Russell Wilson on the same level, but the way they play, they do the exact same things to help their teams win.
You know, you mentioned Aaron Rodgers, and obviously you are a Green Bay Packer and always will be a Packer. This is a team that comes into the playoffs having lost 7 of their last 10, and if it was not for a wild Hail Mary, it would be even worse. Whipped up pretty bad in Arizona and then beaten at home in Lambeau on Sunday night to lose the division. How do they turn this around?
I look at this offense, and it's kind of a spinoff of the offense that I played in. A lot of the terminology is extended, but the plays are still the same. Bob, for me, and having looked at this offense through analyst eyes and talked to Mike McCarthy a lot over the years, I think they got to relieve some of this pressure off of Aaron Rodgers. The thing is Aaron Rodgers in this offense is starting to look like, you remember a couple of years ago, Ben Roethlisberger, it wasn't the play that was called in the huddle that was so successful. It was the secondary phase of the play. You know, Ben would move around and, you know, somebody would come open or somebody would make a move, or, you know, Sanders or Brown would you know, turn a short route upfield and throw it over the top. I think they're going to have to get away from that with Aaron Rodgers and get back to more of a traditional, and I'm going to use the term West Coast style of offense, where, you know what, we got a 14-yard in by the receiver, we got a back in the flat, and we got a tight end over the ball, and they're standing still. This offense is constant motion. So if Aaron doesn't like what he sees or the receivers don't like what they see in the first window, it's constant motion. When I played receiver back in the dark ages, we were taught you never run through a zone. Well, the Green Bay Packer receivers run through zones all the time because Aaron's always moving around trying to find that secondary phase of the play. So I think this offense, and this is my own opinion just from watching them and studying this offense over the years, Bob, is I believe they got to go back to a more traditional where the receivers stop, where Aaron reads 1 to 2 to 3, as opposed to, okay, I don't like that, let me move over here. Okay, the receivers are going to change now, and they're going to do something different, and then I'm going to extend the play a little bit more, and then I'm going to try and get the 25 or the 30-yard throw. I just think they got to get away from that, alleviate some of that pressure on Aaron Rodgers, and get back to a more traditional offense.
Now let's go to the other side of the ball with them stopping people. They've got Washington with Kirk Cousins playing very well, especially at home. Two talented running backs. They've got a tight end that can really hurt you down the middle of the field. DeSean Jackson, you have to respect the speed. I mean, he only runs two routes. It's a go and it's a deep post, but you know, but it's a factor.
It's very effective. It's very effective.
And then you throw Garcon in on the other side, who's a pro's pro. Does Green Bay have enough to slow this down?
Ooh, and I tell you what, you don't want this game in halftime being 10-10. Or you don't want this game at the end of the third quarter being 17-17. Because of Washington's balance. And I go back to what I was saying about Green Bay's offense. They're going to get a chance to see that watching the Washington offense, because it's a very similar offense. Terminology and routes and all that will be the same. And I think they're going to get a chance to see it. But because of what you mentioned, because of what they do running the football with those two backs and how the receivers complement each other, Jordan Reed and Pierre Garcon. I love Pierre Garcon's game. And I think DeSean Jackson, I give him shots early because when he's interested, he's very dangerous. I think the Green Bay Packers understand that this is a monumental task on their defense, because if they can't get to Kirk Cousins and disrupt him, this thing could get out of hand. This thing could get out of hand in Washington's favor. So very difficult matchup for the Green Bay Packer defense. Very difficult matchup, I believe, for the Green Bay Packer offense. This group gets after their quarterback. They're not afraid to blitz Aaron Rodgers either. So this is a pivotal game, I think, for Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy. Mike McCarthy started the year, let someone else call plays, Tom Clemens. All of a sudden, I need to get that back, and the offense doesn't look any better. So I just think that they're going to have to get to a more traditional offense to not only win this football game, but to go forward into the playoffs.
Sterling, that's great stuff. What a great breakdown. And as you know, on SiriusXM NFL Radio, and for our listeners, I host a show with your brother, Shannon, who is...
Yeah, Mondays and Fridays.
Yeah, Mondays and Fridays, who's like, you're Mr. Golf, he's Mr. Workout. Do you ever get tired just listening to him talk about his workout? Because I'm exhausted just listening to it.
You know what I love? I love passion. I love people who enjoy what they do. And I get a chance to be around a lot of my friends that I went to college with here in South Carolina, Bob, and some of them are in jobs that they really don't like. Some of them don't like getting up, going to work in the morning. Some of them don't. You know, it's what I have to do, but I don't like it. And there's very rare opportunities to meet someone that loves doing what they do as much as I love doing what I do. I love talking football. I love breaking down games and watching players grow and playing golf. Listening to him talk about his workout or post on Twitter. You know, on my Twitter, all I do is follow him because I want to see what he did spinning. You know, he set a record in spinning, and he, you know, it almost killed him, but, you know, he's recovered, and he can't wait to go back in 4 hours and do it again. So it's fun to have someone love life, love what they do, and is passionate about their life and what they do, as you are. So it's a lot of fun for me. And I understand because I love golf as much as he loved working out.
And that's what made you both great on the football field as well. It's the Diamond Resort Invitational Celebrity Golf Event. It's going to be on Golf Channel next Thursday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, 2:30 to 4:30. Sterling Sharp is in the field. You don't want to miss it. He's got a tremendous game and always has a lot of fun out on the golf course. Sterling, we appreciate you joining us here on this edition of the Papa's Cast, and don't be a stranger, my friend.
Bob, it's been a pleasure. You know, it's been a while since you and I, you know, got a chance to talk football in the booth or and I look forward to doing it with you again, my friend.
Yeah, and you know, I'm gonna share just a quick story. You and I called the Super Bowl in Tampa. It was Super Bowl 47, doing it for international TV. And this is how Sterling has such a sharp eye for the game. Because you said to me during a timeout, the way you were watching Troy Polamalu, and you saw that he was taking risks. And you said, you know what? Arizona is going to get him on a deep post because he's getting a little bit too predictable as to his chance taking. And like you said it during one of those sort of international TV breaks, and they came out and boom, there goes Larry Fitzgerald wide open up the middle. That's the keen eye that Sterling Sharp has.
Love when the game sets up very easy for you. That's a lot of fun.
Sterling, we appreciate it, buddy. We'll see you down in Orlando.
Bob, it's a pleasure, and I look forward to it, my friend. Take care of yourself.
Sterling Sharp joining us on this edition of the Papa Cast.